Good morning, everyone. I just want to introduce myself. My name is Sarit Ann Standig. I teach Jewish studies at the First School, and I graduated GPATS a year and a half ago. And I'm so grateful to be here today to be learning with all of you. Thank you all for coming. I know that GPATS was an incredibly meaningful experience for me to learn on such an advanced level. And I know that not only did I enjoy it, but it has served me very well in my current teaching position. So I want to thank you all for coming and supporting the program and coming to learn with us today. So prom is coming up, and I'm sure we're all excited. We're thinking about our costumes. We're thinking about our suda plans. Mishloach manot. We're thinking about how to celebrate the day of Thursday, March 24th. But it might not even faze us that our friends and family in Yerushalayim are not planning for Thursday, March 24th, but actually for Friday, the day later. And this is what we know as Shushan Purim, where certain places, certain Jewish communities actually celebrate Purim one day later. Isn't this interesting? What other law do we have? What other holiday or time in our calendar do we have where different parts of the Jewish community celebrate at different times? Now you might say, oh, in Chutz La'aretz we celebrate 2 days of Yontif, and in Israel they only celebrate one. But first of all, we're starting on the same day. And second of all, that was not the original intention. That was from a place of doubt long ago, which day was the correct day to celebrate on, so therefore we developed the tradition to have 2 days of Yontif. But it seems like Purim is unique, in that it's the only holiday where a priori, from the start, there were two different days to celebrate. Some people in the Jewish community celebrated on one day, and some celebrated on the next day. I would like to explore with you today this very interesting halacha, this very interesting tradition that we have of celebrating 2 days of Purim, some on one day and some on the other, something so unique that we don't see for any other time in the Jewish calendar. We're going to begin our discussion with the sources in the actual Megillah, in Megillat Esther. So everyone please turn to source number one. And this is already the end of the story. The Jews have thwarted the plans of Haman, and everything is fine. They're no longer going to be destroyed. They actually defend themselves. And the Megillah here actually describes the dates of when the Jews defended themselves. And it describes how they fought on the 13th of Adar against their enemies. And then they rested on the 14th. The 14th was a rest day, a celebration, a day of feasting and partying and happiness. But the Jews of Shushan actually did something different. They fought on the 13th of Adar and the 14th of Adar. They fought an additional day. And then they celebrated on the 15th. So what we have is in the first year, the year that Purim actually happened, most Jews are celebrating the miracle on the 14th of Adar. But then the Jews of Shushan are celebrating on the 15th. Okay, great. Very nice, two different days. But now let's see what happens the next year. I want you all to turn to source number one. We're going to start with Pasuk Yod Tet, Pasuk 19. And this is where we learn about what everyone did after the first year. In the second year, what was established now going forward. Al kein ha-Yehudim ha-Prazim, ha-Yoshvim ba-Arei ha-Prazot, Osim et yom arba'asa lechodesh Adar simcha mishtev yom tov mishloach manot Yisrael. Therefore, the Jews in Prazim, this word means open towns, unwalled, places without walls, these places celebrated Purim on the 14th year after year. It became a tradition for them that the 14th of Adar would be their day of celebration. Now, if you read on in the Megillah, it actually says nothing about what people in walled towns did. So we know that people in unwalled towns, in open towns, celebrated on the 14th, but we have no idea what people in walled towns did. Did they celebrate anything? Did they celebrate on the 14th? Did they celebrate a different day? We don't know. And then we hear next in Pasukaf, Vayichtov Mordechai et hadvarim ha'eleh, Vayishlach svarim al kol ha'yodim, asher b'chol medinot ha'melech ha'chashverosh, ha'korim ha'rechokim. Moshe sends letters to the entire Jewish community. Mordechai establishes what will be the tradition. The 14th of Adar and the 15th of Adar will be the holiday of Purim. He says these 2 days are dedicated to this holiday. Now, there are so many questions that we can ask on this small event in the Megillah, but I want to focus on a few. First of all, why does Mordechai establish 2 days of celebration? Why does he say that the 14th and the 15th will be days that we celebrate Purim? Why 2 days? We know that today we don't celebrate 2 days. We either celebrate the 14th or the 15th, but no one is celebrating both. It sounds like Mordechai is saying celebrate the 14th and the 15th, 2 days. Why does Mordechai establish more than 1 day of celebration for Purim? And also, why is there this distinction made in the Megillah between walled cities and unwalled cities? Why is that a relevant factor? Why are we discussing what happens in walled places and what happens in unwalled places? Why is that the distinction being made in the Megillah about when to celebrate Purim? These two questions are going to guide us as we continue through our sources. In order to start answering this question, we're going to go to the Mishnah. The Mishnah in source number 2 in Masechet Megillah. This is the first Mishnah in Masechet Megillah. And it's discussing the times when we are supposed to read from Megillah Esther. And the Mishnah goes as follows. Megillah nikrit b'acharasar, b'shneimasar, b'shoshasar, b'arbasar, b'chamishasar, lo pachot v'lo yoter. The Megillah can actually be read on many different days. It can be read on the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, or 15th of Adar. Those are all the possible dates that we could read the Megillah on. Krachin hamukafin choma mimot Yehoshua ben Nun, korin b'chamishasar. And here's a key piece for us. Krachin hamukafin choma means towns that are walled, that are surrounded by a wall, from the times of Yehoshua ben Nun, read the Megillah on the 15th of Adar. Kfarim v'ayarot gedolot korim b'arbasar ela shekfarim makdimin l'yom ha'knisa. The Megillah goes on to describe that most towns, most cities read the Megillah on the 14th, but small villages, small towns that were very spread out, they would read on the day of assembly. When they all got together, they would read. So they could read on the 11th, 12th, 13th, or 14th, depending on when they all gathered together. However, the default is the 14th, except for one big exception, people who lived in walled towns from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. So we still have our original questions of why are there different days of celebration? And why is there this distinction being made between walled and unwalled towns? But now we have an additional factor. The Mishnah describes how it's from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. What is that all about? Where is that coming into play? Why are we talking about Yehoshua ben Nun, who came way before the story in the Megillah? Why is that a factor here about this law at all? These are three questions now that we have that we'll be dealing with as we move on. So let's now move to the next page, to source number 3. This is a pretty extensive piece from the Gemara. The Gemara here, Talmud Bavli, is commenting on the Mishnah in the Megillah that we just saw on the page before, and it's trying to understand the source of the law that people in walled towns celebrate on the 15th. Where is this from? How do we know this? And the Gemara goes into a deep analysis of the Psukim in the Megillah to try to understand what is the source for this law. It's going to entertain every other possibility of how we can understand the Megillah. In the end, it's going to conclude what the Mishnah had said, but let's just read about how the Gemara explains this Mishnah. So source number 3. Krachin emukafin choma mimot Yehoshua ben Nun korim b'chamishasar. This is just a quote from the Mishnah. Mina hanimilei. Where are these words from? How do we know that people who lived in towns surrounded by walls celebrated on the 15th? Amarava, samarkra, alkena yodim haprazim hayoshvim barei haprazot v'gomer, midiprazim barbaasar mukafim v'chamishasar. Gemara is a very logical explanation. The Megillah describes how in the years following the miracle of Purim, in the second year, the third year, etc., people who lived in open cities, in unwalled towns, celebrated Purim on the 14th. Now, as we noted already when we read these psukim from the Megillah, it never mentioned what people in walled towns did. We have no idea. So the Gemara is deducing it must be that if the people in unwalled towns celebrate on the 14th, it must be that the Jews in walled towns celebrated on the 15th. We know that Mordechai establishes the 14th and the 15th as the days of Purim. So if one group is celebrating on the 14th, it must be that the other group is celebrating on the 15th. Very logical. Makes a lot of sense. Some of us might have even been thinking this when we originally read the Psukim. But the Gemara is going to question this further. Ve'ema prazim barbasar mukafin klal lo. But maybe, the Megillah describes how people in unwalled towns celebrate on the 14th. Maybe Jews in walled towns don't celebrate Purim at all. Maybe that's why the Megillah left it out about what they do, because they don't celebrate Purim. Imagine, some people would be celebrating Purim, some people would not be celebrating the holiday at all. And the Gemara rejects this, and it says, V'lav Yisrael ninhu? Aren't people in walled towns also Jews? You're going to say that they don't have to celebrate Purim? Of course they're going to celebrate Purim. They're part of the nation of Israel. And the Gemara goes on, Od mehodu v'ad kush kativ. The Megillah describes the territories within Ahasuerus' kingdom, from Hodu to Kush. Of course, there were walled cities within his kingdom. So you're going to say that the walled places, people in walled cities did not celebrate? It doesn't make sense. Of course, there were walled cities within his kingdom. Of course, they were also saved. How could you say that they would not celebrate? So the Gemara is back to its original assumption that Jews in walled towns celebrate Purim on the 15th. But obviously, the Gemara is going to come with another rejection. What does it say? Ve'ema prezim ba'arbesar, mukafim ba'arbesar, uvachamesar. K'tichtiv, liyotosim et yom rabasar, l'chodesh atar, v'et yom chamishasar, bo l'chol shana. Maybe Jews in walled towns keep the 14th. Sorry, Jews in unwalled towns keep the 14th. Jews in walled towns could keep the 14th and the 15th. As it says, Mordechai established the days of Purim to be the 14th and the 15th. Maybe Jews in walled towns actually kept both days, 2 days of Purim. Gemara responds, Ihava katav et yom arbasar v'chamishasar ketika amart, hashta tichtiv et yom arbasar v'et yom chamishasar ata etu pasik, hani barbasar v'hani b'chamishasar. The Gemara describes a very technical reason of why this can't be so. The psukim say that Mordechai established the 14th and the 15th as days of celebration, and there's a word, ve'et, in between the 14th and the 15th. So the Gemara is saying that word, ve'et, must show that there's that separation between the 14th and the 15th. It can't be that one group within the Jewish community is keeping both the 14th and the 15th. That word et is showing it can't be. You can only keep one or the other. It's either the 14th or the 15th, but you don't keep both. The Gemara responds. Ve'ema prazim barbesar mekafin ibar barbesar ibar b'chamisar. But maybe Jews in walled towns could actually choose. Do they want to celebrate on the 14th? Do they want to celebrate on the 15th? They won't keep both, but they'll keep one or the other. That would solve the issue of them keeping 2 days. And the Gemara responds, Amar kra bizmanehem, zmano shazel lo zmano shazel. No, the word bizmanehem, which literally means in their times, in their appointed times, that word appears later in the Megillah, in the psukim that follow what I've quoted for you on the first page, but that word shows that there are different times for different groups. Walled cities have a certain time for them. Unwalled cities have a certain time for them. There's no overlap. It can't be that they cross over and celebrate the same day. It must be that one group is on the 14th and one group is on the 15th. And I've included here one last question of the Gemara. It's almost exhausting, right? They've exhausted this question of how do we know the 15th? They have one last question. Ve'ema b'tleisar. But maybe if we know that Jews in unwalled towns celebrate on the 14th, maybe Jews in walled towns celebrate the previous day on the 13th. Because we know they must be on separate days, so maybe it's the day before. The Gemara says, Kishushan. They do what Shushan did. The people of Shushan celebrated on the 15th, and so too all towns that have walls celebrate on the 15th. So what we've established here is the Gemara has really done an exhaustive job of trying to understand the source of this law that walled towns, people in walled towns celebrate on the 15th. And it has established that, yes, they do celebrate on the 15th, and there is a reason for that from the Megillah. We also see here that this concept of walled versus unwalled seems to somehow be related to Shushan. Right? We're going to keep on referencing back to what Shushan did. Shushan, which was a walled city at that time of the story, they kept the 15th. And so too, for some reason, we extend that to all walled cities. We'll look further into why we do that, why we extend that to a larger category, not just Shushan, but all cities with walls. But it seems like there is that basic connection between Shushan and between what all walled cities should do as a result. We're going to pause here in the Gemara. We're going to come back to the second paragraph, but I want you to all turn to page 3. Ramban Nachmanides has a fascinating approach to this question about why do we have 2 days of celebration? What is this all about? He really gets into the nitty-gritty and he really explains to us all of our questions about why the law is established as it was. And he starts off by asking, Ani tama me'od, ma ra'u al kacha u'ma higia aleihem laso Yisrael agudot b'mitzvah hazo. How could it be that B'nai Yisrael are divided into factions about this holiday? Some are keeping the 14th of Adar as their day of celebration. Some are keeping the 15th. How could that be? Right? We pride ourselves on being one nation, on doing things together. Every other holiday is set for the same day. How could it be that we have different groups doing different things? Isn't this divisive? How could we do this? And Ramban answers, Kishayinti bektuvim, nitashiv li ha'inyan yafeh, lefi shehu davar barur, shebizmano shal neseh, kfar nifkidu Yisrael va'alu la'aretz, birshiyon koresh, v'nitashvu ba'areihem. So just to take a step back, I'm just going to give you a little Jewish history lesson, crash course. In 586 BCE, the first temple was destroyed, the first Beit HaMikdash was destroyed by the Babylonians. And the Jews are exiled to Babel. And then eventually the Babylonian Empire is taken over, conquered by the Persian Empire. In 538 BCE, Cyrus the Great, known in Hebrew as Koresh, he appears in Tanakh. He is the leader of the Persian Empire at that time. And he allows the Jews to return to their homeland. He says, he actually allows all people within his kingdom to return to wherever they came from. But it's important for us that we were allowed to actually go back to Eretz Yisrael, and he specifically allows us to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. And this is the beginning of the process of setting up the second Beit HaMikdash. We don't start right away in building it, but we start the process. We start going back to Eretz Yisrael. And Ramban describes how at this time, when the Purim story took place, most Jews actually were living in Eretz Yisrael. They had already began to go back to Eretz Yisrael. I'm sure this is a debate that this is a point that could be debated by historians, but Ramban believed that at that point, actually most Jews were living in Israel. And so he kind of shifts the focus, that although the whole story takes place in Shushan, we only know of Shushan, this city, but actually, it really had an impact mostly on Jews in Israel, because that's where the majority of the Jewish population was at that time. And so with that in mind, he describes why we have this distinction and how between walled and unwalled and how this all came to be. So on the third line, on Sheikhnesa Hagdolah, Imrov Yisrael Ba'aretz Hayu. So most of Israel was living in Eretz Yisrael. Ukeshetziva Cheshverosh Lashmi V'Harog L'Abid, Hayu HaPrazim V'Ayarot, She'en Lahem Choma Saviv B'Safeik, V'Sakana Gidolah. I underline this line because this is a key point that Ramban is making. What is this distinction about walled versus unwalled? Where do we get this from? Why is this important? It's because at the time when Achashverosh made his decree to destroy all Jews, it was the greatest danger for Jews living in open towns. They didn't have walls to protect them. They were in more danger. They were much more scared about what would happen. They had no sense of protection. So what happens? The miracle happens. B'nai Yisrael manage to fight against their enemies. They're saved. And what happens? U'lachar mikin b'shanim haba'ot. The years after Purim, amdu prazim v'nahug me'atzman lasot yom arba'asar simcha u'mishteh yom tov. So years later, right, the year after Purim, in the following year, after the miracle happened, the Jews who experienced a real sense of salvation, they got up and said, let's celebrate. Let's commemorate this day. The Jews in towns without walls who really felt the miracle, they decided to get up and make this a holiday for themselves. Make this a day of celebration. However, what about the Jews in walled cities? Let's read on in Ramban. Aval mukafin, towns that were surrounded by a wall, lo asu klum, they did nothing. Imagine, the second year after Purim, not everyone is celebrating the holiday. Only people who really felt the miracle, only people who lived in unwalled towns, they decided, let's have a holiday. But people who lived in walled towns, they didn't really feel it. They didn't really care. We weren't really in danger. We're not going to celebrate this. They don't celebrate the holiday of Purim. And that's exactly why according to Ramban, in the Megillah. It describes what the people in unwalled towns did the year after Purim, but it says nothing about people in walled towns. It makes no mention of them because they didn't do anything. That omission is telling us they did nothing at all. But what happens later? Let's go on to the second paragraph in Ramban. Achar zman, after some time, a portion of the Jewish population celebrating this holiday on the 14th, and a portion not celebrating at all, what happens? Amar Mordechai, ubeitino, vira'u divrahem shel prezim, shera'ui hanes hazeh lasot lo zecher ledorot, vekavuoto al kol Yisrael shekulan hayu b'safik. Mordechai decides, this is ridiculous. Only some Jews are celebrating this holiday? Everybody should be a part of this. This was a danger for all Jews. Even if you didn't feel like you were in danger because you lived in a walled town, this was still dangerous for everyone. And he decides it's time that the entire Jewish community together celebrates this holiday. And you would think that we would all celebrate on the 14th, just like the Jews in the unwalled towns had established. But Mordechai does something else. And take a look at the underlined part of the second paragraph. V'ra'ui la'atim prezim l'mukafin, mipnei shehaya nisam gadol, v'shehem hitchilu b'mitzvah tchila lasot lahem levadam yom tov. Mordechai decides that there will be a distinction. The people in unwalled towns, they'll have their day on the 14th. And people in walled towns will have their day on the 15th. Why? To give some credit, to give some recognition to the people who were really in danger here and who really took initiative in making this holiday happen. The people who lived in unwalled towns and did not feel protected, they decided next year to make this a holiday. They should get some credit. They should get some credit for the fact that A, they were most in danger, and B, they took initiative to make this a holiday. We're going to prioritize them by having them celebrate first. They're on the 14th. Give them some credit. Let them go first. The 15th then will be the day for people who are not as much in danger. For the people living in walled towns, it wasn't such a big deal for them. They'll go second, right? They're not going to be the stars here. The stars are the people who were really in danger, really took the initiative to make this a holiday, a celebration. We're going to make this into 2 days, the 14th and the 15th. And that's exactly, Ramban goes on to describe, that's exactly what happens when Mordechai sends out letters in the Megillah saying, keep the 14th and the 15th as days of Purim. That's exactly what he's referring to. Mordechai realizes that the entire Jewish community is not all celebrating this holiday. And he doesn't think that's okay. We need to all be in this together. Right? He's making the point, this is dangerous for everyone. Not just for you who didn't have a wall, but even for you who had a wall and felt like you were great, nothing was going to happen to you, even you. This was a miracle for you too. And so therefore, everyone is going to celebrate this holiday. So Ramban has really explained for us what this distinction is all about. Walled versus unwalled seems so random, but it's not. Ramban is saying it's about how they experience the holiday. If it was a bigger miracle for them or a smaller miracle for them, that's what it's all about. So I want to, I quoted for you next source number 5, the Ran. And the Ran basically rips the Ramban to pieces. I didn't quote the full arguments here, but he basically says, Ramban, you make no sense. This is not why we have the 14th and the 15th. It is not based on who was in danger, who was less in danger. It's not about that. You know why? Because even Jews living in walled towns, who else is living with them in those walled towns? Non-Jews are also living with them. You think that Jews in walled towns were totally protected? How could that be? They also had non-Jews living in the towns with them. They were equally as in danger. You can't say that the Jews in walled towns felt safe and the Jews in unwalled towns didn't feel safe. It doesn't make sense. It's just not the reality of the situation. Jews were living with non-Jews in their towns. And the Ran explains, why do we have it then, these 2 days, the 14th and the 15th? So let's read source number 5. Mipnei sheyehudim hayoshvim ba'arei haprazot vayehudim asher b'shushan lo nachu mo'eviyhem b'yom echad. שראי יהודים הפרסים נחו בארבע עשר, והיהודים אשר בשושן נחו בחמישה עשר, ועשו מעליהם כל אחד ביום מלכותו משתה ושמחה. Very simply, the Ran gives the answer that probably most of us would have assumed. Why do we have the day of the 14th and the day of the 15th? Because we follow what happened the first year of Purim. The first year, the Jews in Shushan had 2 days of fighting, the 13th and the 14th of Adar, and they celebrated on the 15th, a day later. But all other Jews celebrated a day earlier. We follow that distinction. Shushan did this, everyone else did this. But why do we expand that to all walled cities following Shushan? The Ran describes, at the last line, V'hashvu kol ha-kvachim ha-mukafim choma l'shushan b'pnei sheba haya ikar ha-niz. Why do we equate all walled cities with Shushan? Because that's where the primary miracle was. The Ikar HaNes, the primary miracle happened in Shushan. We want to really focus on Shushan. We want to highlight Shushan, what happened in Shushan. Let's expand the category of Shushan. Let's expand it to all walled cities and really highlight the primary miracle that happened at Shushan. So let me just summarize this basic machloka between Ramban and the Ran. Ramban is basically saying the 14th of Adar is the real day of Purim. Right? That's really when the Jews who were in the most danger were saved. That's really the day that originally was the day of Purim. The 15th is an add-on. It's an afterthought. The Ran has a totally different approach. The 15th is the real miracle. That's what happened in Shushan. That's the Ikar. We want to focus on the 15th. The 14th, okay, you're the 14th, fine, you'll do the 14th, but the 15th is really where it's at. And it's such a fundamental distinction between them. Is the 14th what we're focusing on, what we're highlighting in this holiday, or is it the 15th? It seems like a very basic machloket between them. So what we've seen so far is, right, we've answered so far our question about why are there 2 days of Purim, right? The Ran and Ramban both give answers. And we've also seen, why is it based on walled versus unwalled? Ramban explained to us it's based on how much people were in danger. I want to now take the time to focus on a different question within this larger topic. And this brings us back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah Masechta Megillah described how Jews living in walled towns from the time of Yehoshua keep the 15th of Adar as their day of Purim. We mentioned at the beginning, why Yehoshua? Where is he coming in? It seems so unrelated to the holiday of Purim. He's centuries earlier than the holiday of Purim. Why is this law based on Yehoshua? This is what I want to explore now with you, this question. So turn back to that Gemara on page 2, that second paragraph that we didn't do yet. I'd like to do that with you now. So on source number 3, the second paragraph. And the Gemara is looking into, right, this discussion of what defines a walled city. At what point in history does it need to be walled? Now the Mishnah we know says it's from the time of Yehoshua. It would be much more logical, and I think many of us would say this, to say it's based on the time of the Purim story. Based on the time of Ahasuerus. Was a city walled or unwalled? Why don't we say that? Why don't we come up with a much more logical reason of if it was walled at the time of Ahasuerus, then it does this. And if it wasn't, then it does that. Why Yehoshua? The Gemara is going to discuss this idea. And in fact, there is an opinion, a different Tana, that actually says that this law should be based on if a city was walled during the times of Ahasuerus or not. So let's look at the second paragraph in source 3. Matnitin de lo ki haitana, de Tanya Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha Omer, krachinim akafin chomam imot Ahasuerus, karin b'chamisha asar. Our Mishnah is clearly not like the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, who says that what defines a walled city, it's based on if it was walled during the times of Ahasuerus. Our Mishnah clearly does not follow this, because our Mishnah says it's based on the times of Yehoshua ben Nun. And now the Gemara is going to explore these two different opinions. Is it based on Yehoshua ben Nun, or is it based on Ahasuerus? Gemara asks, my time adds Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha. What's his logic? What is Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha's logic by saying that a walled city is dependent on if it was walled during the times of Ahasuerus? Gemara responds, Kishushan, ma shushan mukef al chomam imor Ahasuerus, v'karim b'chamisha asar, av kol shi mukef al chomam imor Ahasuerus, karim b'chamisha asar. It makes a lot of sense. Just like Shushan. Shushan, which was surrounded with a wall at the time of Ahasuerus and reads on the 15th, so too, all cities that were surrounded by a wall during the times of Ahasuerus should read on the 15th. Makes a lot of sense, this answer, right? It all follows the times of Ahasuerus. However, we know that our Mishnah does not agree with this opinion. And now we're going to return to our opinion of the Mishnah. And the Gemara asks, the Tana Didan, my Tana, our Tana, the teacher in our Mishnah who taught that it was from the times of Yehoshua. What's his logic? Where is he getting this from that it's based on Yehoshua? Gemara responds, Yalif Prezi Prezi, Ketiv Hacha Alkena Yadim HaPrezim, Ketiv Hatam Levad Marei HaPrezi Harbe Ma'od, Malahalan Mukefel Chomami Mot Yehoshua Benun, Afkan Mukefel Chomami Mot Yehoshua Benun. Gemara here employs a principle called Gezerah Shava. Gezerah Shava basically works in taking two words that are the same shorash or the same exact word and saying, just like something applies here, also it applies here. It's almost like the Gemara is looking for a definition of something, and if it's defined as something in one location, then we could also take it to be defined as that in another location. Now the word prezi or prezim means open towns, unwalled. We've seen that word once already in the Megillah. It describes what the open towns did the second year after Purim, after the miracle's over. Years later, they established the 14th of Adar, their day of celebration. The other place where it says prezim and the Gemara makes this connection is from the end of Sefer Devarim. The context is Bnei Yisrael are conquering some lands in Eivar HaYarden before actually going into Eretz Yisrael. They conquer some lands, and it mentions Levad Me'arei HaPrezi. It's describing how they captured some lands, and it mentions in that context unwalled towns. So we have unwalled towns mentioned in the Megillah, and we have unwalled towns mentioned at the end of Devarim. In the larger context there was capturing the land of Israel. Who's the leader in capturing the land of Israel? This is Yehoshua. And so, if a walled town is defined by the times of Yehoshua and Sefer Devarim, so too, we're going to define it like that in our Megillah. So the Bavli actually learns from this very technical analysis, this one word, prezim, if it means it here, it means it there. Just like it's talking about Yehoshua there, so too, it's talking about Yehoshua here. But now the Gemara has an issue. And the Gemara in the last line asks, Shushan de Avda Kaman. But what about Shushan? Now Shushan was walled in the times of Ahasuerus, but it was not walled in the times of Yehoshua. So what does Shushan do? This entire holiday is called Shushan Purim. It's all based on what happened in Shushan. But now the laws about Shushan Purim are actually not applying to Shushan. You can almost feel the tension in the Gemara. What it's trying to do here is it's using Shushan as the model for this law about having a separate day of Purim, but it's then changing the law that it no longer applies to Shushan, and now we're in trouble. What do the people of Shushan actually do? Gemara responds, Shani Shushan ho yavanas abonis. So Shushan is different. In Shushan, they could celebrate on the 15th. Even though they didn't have walls at the time of Yehoshua, since they had walls in the time of Achashverosh, they're different because the miracle happened there. What we see here is a reason for why we have walls. Why is it walled from the times of Yehoshua? We learn a very technical reason from the Gezeirah Shavah. Now, it's very technical, and it might not be so satisfying for most of us. I want to explore other reasons given also for why this definition of a walled city is based on the times of Yehoshua. Let's turn back to the last page, to source number 6. This is the Gemara from Yerushalmi. You know, there are two Gemaras, the Bavli and Yerushalmi. They both comment on the same Mishnah that we saw, the first Mishnah in Masechet Megillah. And while the Bavli describes the reason of why it's based on Yehoshua because of a Gezeirah Shava with the word Prazi, Yerushalmi gives a different reason. So let's read source number 6. Krachim hamukafin choma mimot Yehoshua ben Nun, karim b'chamisha asar, Rabbi Simon b'shem Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, chalku kavod ba'aretz Yisrael, shaita chariva b'otan hayamim, v'talu ota mimot Yehoshua ben Nun. Rabbi Simon gives a completely different answer. What he explains is that at that time, at the time of Purim, the time when the miracle happened, Eretz Yisrael was in ruins. Right? Only a few years before, the Beit HaMikdash had been destroyed. Babylonians had come in and really, really destroyed the entire country, the entire place. And it had not really been built up yet. Yes, there were some Jews living there, but it had not really been built up. It was mainly destroyed. It was mostly in ruins. And so Chazal want to give some recognition, some kavod, some honor to Eretz Yisrael. Yes, Eretz Yisrael was in ruins then. If the holiday of Shushan Purim was based on if a city was walled from the times of Achashverosh, there would be very few places in Eretz Yisrael that would qualify as that. On the other hand, if we go back to the times of Yehoshua, Eretz Yisrael would be more prominent. There would be more places that would be included. It would be a bigger deal for Eretz Yisrael. The rabbis wanted to give some honor to Eretz Yisrael. And so while the Bavli gives a technical reason, Gezeirah Sheva, about Yehoshua, the Yerushalmi gives a more historical approach. It was in destruction. The rabbis don't want to make a law totally ignoring Israel. No. They want to make a law that gives honor to Israel, that recognizes Israel in its glory, or more glorious than at least what it was at this point. Interesting, I didn't look into this further, but I think it would be interesting if there are patterns between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. The Bavli uses a much more technical derivation, and the Yerushalmi is more historical. I'm wondering if maybe it has to do with the fact that Yerushalmi was written in Eretz Yisrael. It might have been a different sensitivity that they had towards what was going on in Eretz Yisrael at that time. So we've seen two reasons so far. I wanted to go to source number 7. Beit Yosef explains the Gemara. And he basically just flushes it out. He says that, Kevan de mitzvah zo hukva'a bizman korbanash la'Eretz Yisrael, ro'u chachamim she'abo, tov hador la'sot zecher la'Eretz Yisrael ben Yisrael. The rabbis wanted to make some recognition of Eretz Yisrael in the holiday of Purim. Olufichak, tiknu shemukafin choma mimot Yoshua yikru betet vav, u'she'ar ha'ayarot yikru b'yadalad, v'ilu lo hayu mechakin b'nehem, Lo haya la'Eretz Yisrael zecher b'nei sazeh. The rabbis had not made the definition of a walled city based on the times of Yehoshua, there would be no recognition of Eretz Yisrael in this holiday at all. I think it's interesting to think about all of our holidays. They all seem to be somewhat related to Eretz Yisrael. Either the holiday happens there, the miracle happened, or the way that we celebrate the holiday is we give korbanot, we do aliyah l'regel, something involving Eretz Yisrael. Purim did not happen in Eretz Yisrael. There's nothing about Eretz Yisrael in it. It seems like the only holiday that we have that has nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael. And it seems like the rabbis, Chazal, wanted to bring Israel into the picture. Wanted to bring Eretz Yisrael into the picture. They wanted to give honor to Eretz Yisrael. Let's take a look at source number 8, Pachad Yitzchak, who gives a different understanding of what kavod means when we give kavod to Eretz Yisrael. What is the Yerushalmi talking about? The Pachad Yitzchak explains it in a little bit of a different way. And he talks about our relationship with Amalek. Now, as many of you know, Haman is a descendant of Amalek. And there's an entire subplot to the story of Purim. It's not just a battle between Haman and the Jews, but it's really a larger battle between Amalek and the Jewish people. A battle that began when we were in the desert after we left Mitzrayim, and it continues. It's an eternal battle for us. And that's kind of the underlying story behind the story of Purim, not just individual people, but nations at large. And the obligation in destroying Amalek, we have an obligation to remember what happened and to destroy Amalek, that actually only takes place when we enter Eretz Yisrael. And this is going to be the key piece for Pachad Yitzchak. What does he say? Chovah ha-yitziyah l'mechama Amalek, chalah hi-aleinu mishat kibushol shal Yehoshua b'nun. The obligation to actually destroy Amalek, when does this begin? It begins with the conquest of Israel. And our leader at that time was Yehoshua. So the story of Purim, which is so much about Amalek and our defeat over Amalek, when does that story begin, the larger story about Amalek? This really happens already way, way back from the times of Yehoshua. He was the first leader that was really, right, had the responsibility of destroying Amalek. And so why do we say that walled towns are defined by what happened in the times of Yehoshua? It's based on when the obligation of destroying Amalek actually fell upon us. This happened when we started to conquer the land. Yehoshua was our leader. And so therefore, we want to recognize this larger theme to the Purim story. It's all about Amalek. We do this by defining a walled city from the times of Yehoshua. So we see here there are really three reasons we've seen together about why a walled city based on the times of Yehoshua. Either a Gezeirah Sheva, very technical reason, or to give kavod to Eretz Yisrael that was in ruins at that time, or to recognize when the obligation of destroying Amalek actually took place. I think what's so interesting is that to me, all of these seem related to Eretz Yisrael in some ways. Some of them are obvious, but I think even the Gezeirah Sheva, even the Gemara, the Talmud Bavli, which describes how we know the law is based on Yehoshua from the Gezeirah Sheva, a very technical derivation based on words, even that, the context of the Pasuk and Devarim that they use is about conquering the land of Israel. So yes, they employ a very technical method in order to derive at the law. But the background story is about Israel. It's about Moshe and the Jewish people and soon Yehoshua conquering the land of Israel. All of these reasons are somehow bringing Eretz Yisrael into the picture, right? Reminding us this story is not just a story about Shushan, but don't forget there's also Eretz Yisrael involved here. I think if you take a larger look at the Megillah, there are many hints to Eretz Yisrael in the Megillah and later in the laws that we learn about per and from Chazal. Interestingly, in the Megillah, Shushan is called Ir HaBira, the capital city. I believe that the only other place called Bira, capital in Tanakh, is Yerushalayim. That contrast is showing you something. In addition, it describes how Mordechai was exiled from the land of from Yerushalayim, Asher HaGlal Yerushalayim. Right at the beginning of the story, we already know that Mordechai, he's living in Shushan, but he's really from Yerushalayim. We have that contrast between these two cities. Another example is at the beginning of the Megillah, it describes Achashverosh's vessels, and it says, V'kelim mikelim shonim. And we actually read that in a different trup. We don't read it in the regular tune that we read the Megillah. We read it in the tune of Eicha, because it's reminding us, because Chazal teach that these vessels were actually taken from the Beit HaMikdash. So there are many hints in the Megillah already to Eretz Yisrael. Many people actually even read the Megillah in somewhat of a satirical way. It was really a satire saying, great, story's over, great, you know, you defeated Haman, but you're not done. You're still living in exile. Jews are still living in Shushan. And I think that there are so many hints in the story about this. I think the Chazal are doing the same. They're trying to remind us that there's something else going on here. Yes, this story is a wonderful, wonderful miracle and we should celebrate, but there's still also food for thought about what more there is that we don't have, right? We're still striving for more. We've defeated our enemies, but we're still living in exile at the end of the story in Purim and still now today. We're still living in exile. And I think there's these subtle hints throughout the Megillah, throughout the laws of Purim, reminding us, hey, don't forget about Eretz Yisrael. Don't forget about that, even though this holiday has nothing formal related to Eretz Yisrael, don't forget about it. That's still something important. I think it's no coincidence that when we think of Shushan Purim, we probably think of Yerushalayim. We probably think of what goes on there. There are other places in Israel that are not sure about if they were walled from the times of Yehoshua, and so they do keep many places actually keep 2 days of Purim. They'll read on the 14th with a bracha, but they'll also keep the 15th and read it again. But Yerushalayim is either the only or one of the only places that without a doubt celebrates Shushan Purim only on the 15th. Only on the 15th. Now, it's a question of which places in Yerushalayim are considered part of the city, but looking past that, it's the only place. And I think the rabbis succeeded in what they were trying to do. They're trying to make us focus on Eretz Yisrael. Don't forget that there's more here to the story. So just to conclude, we've learned a lot of different reasons about the background behind why we have these 2 days of celebration. Why, for Purim, it's the only holiday we know of where there are actually, from the outset, two different days to celebrate, right? And I think one major theme that emerges here is this idea of Eretz Yisrael that's really looming in the background. It's just reminding us that while we celebrate and while we are joyous on Purim, we still also have to think about what we're still striving for, what we're still working on as a nation. The story doesn't end here, but we have more to work on. We have more to work on as a nation. So I think really when we all go back to our lives on the 15th of Adar and everyone in Jerusalem, everyone in Yerushalayim is celebrating, I think we are truly giving honor to Eretz Yisrael, which is such an important part of our national story. So I want to thank you all for coming today and learning with me today. And it was really a pleasure for me to be here and to learn with you all. Thank you.